DOT's Inspector General says NATCA is right. Patrick Forey tells Congress what controllers really want. And NTSB wants pilots to get more sleep. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Thursday, June 12th, 2008. The National Air Traffic Controllers Association has made liberal use of hyperbole in criticizing the FAA the last 2 years in an attempt to get Congress to force the agency to resume contract talks with controllers. At times, the rhetoric has been so over the top, it's been hard to tell how serious the ATC system's problems really are. Now, some of NATCA's basic charges are being repeated in a report released Tuesday by the Inspector General of the Department of Transportation, the FAA's parent agency. According to the Associated Press, the IG finds the FAA is hiring so fast to catch up with an unexpected volume of retirements that it has exceeded its own maximum trainee numbers at almost 70 of the nation's 314 ATC facilities. The report also criticizes management of the training program itself for relying on an inaccurate database. The FAA is also accused of failing to implement remedies promised back in 2004. Moreover, the FAA has made a habit of underestimating controller retirements and resignations since imposing a contract settlement in 2006. Those work rules cut top controller pay by $37,800 a year, according to the report. That's about equal to the starting pay of new controllers, which is down from $44,800. Not surprisingly, NATCA President Patrick Forey called the DOT IG report vindication. The FAA responded by rejecting a recommendation that the agency provide an accurate public count of the number of qualified controllers at its facilities each year and the number of trainees. The FAA called that information, quote, of little meaningful use, unquote. Coming off the Tuesday report from the DOT Inspector General, NATCA President Patrick Forey had a Wednesday appointment to speak in Congress. In remarks to the House Subcommittee on Aviation, Forey appeared to recognize that the rhetoric in the union's fight with the FAA may be obscuring an important fact. Forey prefaced his discussion of the FAA's failure to address controller attrition with a comment, quote, before I get to that portion of my testimony, I wanted to tell the subcommittee that the men and women I represent are among the most dedicated and professional employees found in government. I worry that sometimes that fact might get lost on members of the subcommittee because of the focus on our labor dispute with the agency, unquote. Forey then plunged into statistics in support of a controller shortage he warns creates an unacceptable compromise to safety. He noted that while the FAA brags of retaining 3,450 trainees hired between fiscal 2005 and the end of fiscal 2007, only 538 of them have been fully certified, or about 16%. Forey says the FAA failed to plan for the retirement wave by hiring only 13 controllers in 2004. Then, when contract talks collapsed in 2006, followed up with imposed work rules that he blames for, quote, an attrition tsunami that has seen nearly 2,700 controllers and trainees leave the system since, unquote. Forey told lawmakers it's no coincidence that delays, near misses, and runway incursions have all increased as the number of controllers has diminished. He proposed 4 steps to stem what he calls a crisis. Quote, first, the FAA and NATCA must return to the bargaining table to complete contract negotiations. Doing so will help to retain the veteran controllers, responsible for on-the-job training that turns a trainee into a certified controller. Their retention is essential to maintaining safe operation of the system. Second, the FAA must work with NATCA and the National Academy of Sciences, or another independent third party, to not only reestablish scientifically based staffing ranges for each facility, but also to establish concrete limits on trainee ratios. Third, standardized training must continue to be the foundation. The FAA must stop issuing blanket waivers on training to chronically understaffed facilities. And finally, in order to avoid such crises in the future, the FAA must work collaboratively and cooperatively with NATCA on all issues affecting air traffic controllers or their operations, unquote. The FAA certainly doesn't want for outside opinions on how it should do its job these days. The National Transportation Safety Board made 2 recommendations Tuesday to address human fatigue in airline operations. The board recommended that the FAA develop guidance based on empirical and scientific evidence for operators to establish fatigue management systems, including information about the content and implementation of these systems. The board also called on the FAA to develop and use methodology that will continually assess the effectiveness of fatigue management systems implemented by operators, with a goal to improve sleep and alertness, mitigate performance errors, and prevent accidents and incidents. NTSB Chairman Mark Rossanker commented, quote, "We have seen too many accidents and incidents where human fatigue is a cause or contributing factor," unquote. The recommendation went on to cite four such accidents and incidents, ranging from an airline crash with fatalities to the now infamous Go Airlines Flight 1002 in February, in which it's thought both pilots fell asleep, allowing the plane to overshoot its destination in Hilo, Hawaii, by 26 miles before the crew turned back. Rossanker concluded, quote, "Addressing this safety-related measure is long overdue. We must and can correct this serious concern," unquote. Current FAA work rules allow for a 14-hour workday, with a maximum 8 hours of logged airtime. Investigators in the Sudan are still trying to reconcile varying witness accounts of the Tuesday night crash of a Sudan Airways plane. The press association cites the Sudan Civil Aviation Authority in reporting that 29 passengers and crew members died, but 171 escaped the burning plane. Two differing stories on what happened to the Airbus were related by official sources. Police Chief Mohammed Najib told officials the high winds around Khartoum Airport at the time, quote, "caused the plane to crash land, split into two, and catch fire," unquote. But Airport Director Youssef Ibrahim told Sudanese television the airliner had landed safely and the pilots were talking to the control tower to get further instructions when the accident occurred. Quote, "One of the engines exploded and the plane caught fire." One survivor described a rough landing, followed by a sharp impact several minutes later. Investigators have determined the plane skidded off the runway and hit navigation poles, marking the end of the runway, sparking a fire on the right side of the aircraft. Passengers say an engine burst into flames, which then engulfed the cabin after an evacuation had started. In a freak post-crash complication, two civil defense workers were injured when a fuel tank was left undrained and exploded in the summer sun. Coming up next on ANN, Lancair says the Evolution could pass Part 23 if it wanted to. Mooney certifies the Acclaim in Brazil. And Discovery will soon be on its way home to Earth. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-Cessna.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for June 12th, 2008. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Following its inaugural cross-country flight from Redmond, Oregon to Lakeland, Florida in April, Lance Air's brand new Evolution turboprop is now being prepared for its debut at EAA AirVenture Oshkosh. The Evolution's flight characteristics have been independently evaluated for stability and controllability as if it was to be certified under Part 23. Lance Air says the Evolution has passed those tests with flying colors. The company adds preliminary tests to validate the 6 PSI pressurization system have been conducted, and further testing on the pressure vessel and door systems will be conducted later this year up to 12 PSI, allowing for a safety factor of 2 on the system. Production of kits has begun, and the first delivery is scheduled for July. At Oshkosh, the Evolution will perform demo flights and be on display. Demonstration flights will also be available. Mooney announced this week it has received certification for the M20TN Acclaim and Acclaim Type S from the ANAC, the Brazilian Aviation Certification Authority. Brazil did require a single ADF be added to the Garmin G1000 avionics suite, and that a flashlight be included in the owner's accessory pack. The Texas-based plane maker says the approval follows the sale of a new Acclaim to a Brazilian customer and clears the way for eventual certification of the Ovation. CEO Dennis Ferguson calls the certification a significant accomplishment. Quote, Brazil represents a strong potential market for Mooney. It's the country with the second largest general aviation fleet in the world. We have more than 30 Mooneys currently operating there. This certification means that owners of Acclaims in Brazil can register and base their airplanes in the country and will not be required to fly the aircraft out of the country every 60 days, as is currently mandated for foreign registered airplanes, unquote. Ferguson adds Mooney is in the process of establishing a local rep and will pursue approval for the Ovation very soon. The U.S. Space Shuttle Discovery successfully undocked from the International Space Station on Wednesday at 7:42 a.m. Eastern Time in preparation for its return to Earth. Seven Discovery astronauts had bid farewell Tuesday to three colleagues on the International Space Station after a busy 14-day mission, which saw the installation of Japan's first space laboratory. The shuttle also brought a new crew member to the station. Greg Kamatoff replaced fellow American Garrett Reisman, who's headed home to Earth after 3 months at the station. Following a thorough inspection of Discovery's heat shield tiles using a camera on the craft's robotic arm, the shuttle is scheduled to land at the Kennedy Space Center Saturday morning at 11:14 a.m. Eastern Time. The Kibo Lab is the largest part of the space station and joins modules from the U.S., Russia, and the European Space Agency. Hawker Beechcraft Corporation is celebrating the start of customer deliveries of its Hawker 750 this week. The plane claims top range and payload performance and 50% more total cabin volume than its nearest competitor. The first customer example was delivered to Jet Asia Limited for use in the Asia-Pacific region on Wednesday, May 28th. The 750 was announced at the National Business Aviation Association convention in October of 2006. The aircraft is another evolution of the Hawker 800 series and offers a cabin that's wider, taller, and longer than other aircraft in the segment. The company says demand has been so high that no more are available until 2010. Jet Asia Limited, based in Macau, is Asia's premier aircraft charter and management company. The delivery is part of an order made by the company in September 2007 for six of the company's newest jets, two Hawker 900 XP midsize jets, and four of the Hawker 750 light midsize jets. Still ahead, Gamma awards its annual Harold S. Wood Scholarship. Virgin Charter names a new COO, and two Embry-Riddle teams win an FAA design competition. You're listening to Aero News.
This is a story of two pilots. Our first guy, the one with Garmin Waas GPS, he just arrived home from a trip, ready to enjoy a nice home-cooked meal with his supermodel girlfriend.
Chérie, viens près moi.
But our other guy, the pilot without Waas, well, he couldn't quite make it home. Had to divert to an airport with an ILS approach. So now it's dinner from a vending machine in some crummy pilot's lounge. You know which pilot you want to be. Garmin Waas GPS. Follow the leader.
Chérie.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, June 12, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. The General Aviation Manufacturers Association has awarded Eric J. Schrader this year's Dr. Harold S. Wood Scholarship. Schrader recently graduated from Parks College of St. Louis University in Missouri. Schrader was the president and team captain of the school's flight team, the Flying Billikens this year and was key in leading the team to its first national flight team competition appearance in 8 years in 2006. He graduated with honors and is a commercial pilot and certified flight instructor. Schrader volunteers at the St. Louis Science Center's Mission Control Area, where he demonstrates and instructs guests on the center's flight simulator. Gamma notes that Schrader also works with his school's Future Flies program, which is designed to introduce underprivileged youth to aviation through simulator and discovery flights. The scholarship is named in honor of Dr. Harold S. Wood, founder and past executive director of the National Intercollegiate Flying Association. The online private aviation matchmaker known as Virgin Charter announced on Wednesday that Brian Pope has been promoted to Chief Operating Officer. Pope was previously Chief Marketing Officer and will now oversee Virgin Charter's operating groups, including marketing, and continue to report to CEO Scott Duffy. Pope has more than 15 years in management roles with global brands. Prior to serving as Chief Marketing Officer for Virgin Charter, he was credited with developing innovative marketing programs for ING Consulting and Universal Studios Hollywood. Pope holds a BS in economics from the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School and an MBA from Northwestern's Kellogg School. Virgin Charter launched in March as an online marketplace for private air travel, making it easier to find and book charter flights on private aircraft from operators selected for their safety and quality standards. The company is privately held and headquartered in Santa Monica, California. Two student teams from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University recently took first place awards in the FAA's design competition for universities with their proposals for the use of alternative fuels and GPS technology at airports. A team of business administration students from Embry-Riddle's Sky Harbor campus in Phoenix took the first place award in the category of airport environmental interactions for a proposal to use solar energy as a clean, cost-effective alternative fuel for airport ground support equipment. A second Sky Harbor team captured an honorable mention in the runway safety, runway incursions category. The first place Sky Harbor student team members included project leader Cynthia Cook, Zaino Dariani, Roxanne Favors, Tammy Fisher, Samuel Nico, Robin Sullivan, and Sandra Torres. This year's competition attracted 36 proposals from 16 colleges and universities. The Sky Harbor team will receive $3,000 and the Daytona Beach team $2,500, and both first place teams will present their winning proposals at the American Association of Airport Executives annual meeting in New Orleans this month. And finally, Houston, we have a full oven. Okay, well, not exactly. But cheers were heard at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory on Wednesday as the Phoenix Mars lander succeeded in getting Martian soil to fall into one of eight small ovens designed to test for the presence of organic compounds. Phoenix co-investigator Bill Boynton of the University of Arizona, Tucson, said it took 10 seconds of shaking a screen piled with dirt to get enough to fall in to fill the oven. The first three attempts on June 6th, 8th, and 9th dropped only a few particles into the oven. Scientists aren't sure now whether success on the fourth try resulted from the cumulative effects of all the shaking or because of changes in the soil's cohesiveness as it sat for days on the top of the screen. Phoenix principal investigator Peter Smith of the University of Arizona observed, quote, "There's something very unusual about this soil from a place on Mars we've never seen before. We're interested in learning what sort of chemical and mineral activity has caused the particles to clump and stick together," unquote. Hey, if they're this excited about how it clumps, wait until they get to cook and sniff it. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Ed Iacobucci, president and CEO of Dayjet. We'll talk about Dayjet's selection by the FAA to be the beta tester for next-gen air traffic control technology in Florida. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Platt. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.